We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Guilty as Charged podcast presented by our friends over at Prize Picks. My name is Steven and I am the host, and joining me as always is my guy Tyler. Tyler, how are you doing tonight? And any sudden urge to go buy an RV and maybe go close to the beach or just
only if I get to live next to you, buddy. I'm doing very well overall. Excited for this segment that we're doing today. I really feel like, you know, I can't say that anything we do is better than somebody else's. Like, there are so many great Chargers content creators out there, but I can definitively say, and I know for sure, there's nothing like this particular episode out there for Chargers fans. So for whoever's watching or listening, I really appreciate you guys even being here, and I hope you guys enjoy this, because this is the, I don't say the culmination, but it almost is, of months of work for Steven and I think probably 175 different prospects watched between us, all 22. We took notes on them, graded them, wrote profiles, compared their RAS scores, made stats-based rankings for them. Now we're going to take, like, it's pretty nerdy, guys. Like, this one, we're going to take scenarios in round one and find comparable players in rounds two, three, guys in the 300s on the consensus boards, and really compare these guys across the entire draft based on what they did in college, their roles, their styles, their prototypes. Like, this is some stuff, man. So congratulations to us for even getting here. And I'm excited to share it with everyone.
Yeah, we're doing this today. This is kind of our penultimate big draft episode. And then on Thursday, we'll reveal our big board. So I'm doing my best to make sure the big board is finalized by Thursday. You know, doing this exercise made me add a few players to watch. So you know, this is a project of love. Obviously, you know, I love watching the draft. It's not a perfect process. You know, nobody's perfect at this. It's what makes the draft so much fun. But this late in the process, I love just like finding a gem that we can like talk about in this kind of episode. And so this is hopefully an episode that you guys bookmark for next week. If you just love a player in round one, or you love a player in round two and the Chargers don't take that person, this is a great episode for you to kind of go back and look and see, okay, for day three, who could the Chargers be looking at that could be similar to this kind of player that they missed out on in day one and day two. So hopefully you enjoy it live. Hopefully you give us a lot of feedback on the players that we have on this list or don't have on this list. But also, since, like, seriously, bookmark this and save it for next Friday, next Saturday. Come back to it. And we can talk about those players as we go live throughout the rest of the draft process. So again, we're almost there. We are 9 days away, and we're officially down in the home stretch here.
9 days away, man. We suddenly had not enough time, but I'm loving I'm loving the burn to get there. Yeah. And I feel like I'm going to be very satisfied both with how we covered this pre-draft process and what we're able to accomplish in our rankings, and then just enjoy the heck out of the live stream for the next 3 days during the draft. Like, I think we've earned the right to have that much fun on draft day, because we're going to know all these names, except for like the two or three guys in round six or seven I've never heard of before.
Yeah. No, that, I mean, that always happens. Like, we, you know, Dane Brugler, I'm always in awe of his work on the Beast every single year. Like, there's like 2,000 people in his Beast write-up, and then there's 400 like actual reports. And like, he's you know, it's his day-to-day job, full-time. He does it year-round. I just cannot fathom like getting to 400 prospects and doing write-ups and doing research. And you know, it really puts our work into perspective, because I feel like, you know, people think we just like jump on here and we just talk, right? But like, I probably am working like 25, 30 hours a week on the podcast during draft season, watching film, planning with you, you know, coordinating interviews, stuff like that, making cut-ups. It's just, it's a lot of work. And these kind of episodes are why, you know, I keep doing it, because every single January, I'm like, I'm not going to do, you know, 150. I'm just going to do maybe like 75. And then you just get sucked in, man. The draft just sucks you in. And then we make plans like this, and you just have to get to that goal of 150 in order to make quality stuff like this. So hopefully you guys enjoy it. We've certainly enjoyed making these episodes, and I really do love the way that we've covered the draft. I hope you guys have as well, because, you know, we decided to kind of take a departure from our just like position rankings, and I hopefully you've enjoyed it, because I think it's a much more comprehensive way to cover the draft this year.
Yeah, I agree. And those rankings, I'm going to drop all my rankings. Obviously, we'll have our big board, but I'll have all the position rankings. Like, I have a top 30 receivers article coming out pretty soon. I got to get two more guys. Yeah, I've watched a lot of receivers. They better freaking take one, man. but all that stuff is still going to come out and all available to you guys. And so we just get to cover it a whole different way than I think everybody else is with their top 10, top 10, top 10. It's like, okay, well, it's covered a completely different way, and you still get our top 10. So I really like this, but we'll keep tweaking as we go. We're not tweaking, tweaking the process.
Yeah. Joseph says that he has draft fatigue. I totally get that but like for us, I'm like, you know, people keep saying like, oh, like I wish the draft were like 2 weeks earlier. No. Like, I need those extra 2 weeks to like keep watching prospects and solidify things. Like, I went back and watched a couple corners this week who, you know, consensus board has them pretty high relative like to like where the draft hype is. And I was like, okay, nobody's really talking about this guy. Let's go back and watch him and see where we can fit him in. So it should be a lot of fun. All right, let's get started here. We have several different scenarios here. We're treating this essentially like an if-then kind of thing, FOMO, NOMO, as Tyler has it here on the screen. We're going to talk about all of these guys. So if you're not on YouTube, if you're just an audio listener, we appreciate you. We'll be sure to talk about these guys as much as we can. But essentially, consider this your if-then statement. As you learn maybe in middle school English class, you know, what happens if this doesn't happen kind of deal. And we'll cover different scenarios based off of like first round and second round guys for the most part. And if the Chargers miss out on them, what kind of players can the Chargers get to fill similar roles in those later round spots?
Yeah, I love this segment. I think it's a direct ripoff of the Bootleg Football podcast, but this is more of a specific Chargers angle here. So we've done the draft and we've done the prospect watching. This is going to be more a Chargers-specific scenarios, which you guys will see in just a bit. I see people already asking about slot corners. We've got that. Like, we've got plenty to cover. Real quick, just defining like what this means for us, like what other guys means. We've already alluded to it, but it's generally players on day two or day three whose play style, physical prototype, and or role most similarly match day one prospects. Are we saying they're better? Not necessarily. Are we saying that even like other they're better than other players in that range? Not necessarily. They just fit something similar and most similar to one of these guys on day one. And I included an example on here. If you can't tell, I'm a teacher, by the way. stuff like this is kind of in my wheelhouse. So an example of this, of another guy would be like, okay, if you miss out on Dalton Kincaid in round one, you can find Sam Laporta. Or if you miss out on a blocking tight end like Darnell Washington, you can get Luke Schoonmaker on day three. That sort of stuff. Other scenario, if you're the Chargers, you can miss on a tight end altogether. Some bad examples of this from this current draft season, because I've seen this, and we get sent a lot of mock drafts, man. So like, I kind of wanted to, we'll talk about some of these later, but like, if you miss out on here's a bad example. If you miss out on JC Latham in round one, you can draft Kingsley Suamataya in round two. I'm not saying that he's a bad player. I'm not, or that you can't draft him. I'm just saying those two guys are not similar at all. No. Now, there's not a lot of JC Lathams anyway.
Right.
But he doesn't really fit similarly. And maybe this might be easier to understand. Like, if you miss out on Braylon Allen, you know, draft Blake Watson later. You can do that. Two different players, two completely different players. That's kind of how we're approaching this. They have to be similar enough. Hope that makes sense for everyone.
Yeah, this is not just you miss out on an offensive tackle in round one, you can take the next offensive tackle. We are specifically trying to target play styles, athletic traits, and be able to talk about roles that the Chargers could fill in this exercise.
Absolutely.
All right, let's get to the first one here. We all want wide receiver in the first round. I am on board. But if you pass on Malik Nabers and are looking for an explosive, deployable yak threat, that's the first one that we're talking about. Tyler has mentioned his composite rankings. This is kind of where we're trying to live in this kind of round. So, Tyler, why don't you walk us through the guys on day two, and then we can move to day three after that.
Sure. So I wanted to start with this one because there's going to be that inevitable panic if the Chargers don't take a receiver in round one. There are a lot of guys who can do not exactly what Malik Nabers can do, but some of what he can do later on. And I think the guys that best exemplify that on day two and on day three that could fit that are Georgia's Ladd McConkey, Western Kentucky's Malachi Corley, Florida's Ricky Pearsall, Michigan's Roman Wilson, and Washington's Jalen McMillan. Again, not that there aren't other receivers in those rounds, but if you're specifically looking for guys who are deployable, movable, and are yak guys or could be yak guys, those are guys to look at on day two.
Yeah, I was really surprised to look at this list and see specifically like where a guy like Ricky Pearsall ranked, and he actually ranks pretty favorable in the yards after catch per reception because he is kind of a slot guy, but I think if you're talking pure like athletic traits, yak kind of player, I am curious what the Chargers would think of a Malachi Corley. This is a guy who's 57th on the big board consensus. You know, the Deebo Samuel comparison happens every single year to somebody. But from a play style standpoint, like Malachi Corley does have some of that. Like he is just like very difficult to tackle. And they actually use him in the backfield quite a bit. So people will throw it out for like Xavier Legette. It's happened every single year. But from a play style standpoint, Malachi Corley, I think, could fit in that kind of specific role. And I think like the mentality of just like being really difficult to tackle and like just trying to run over people could fit with what the Chargers are specifically looking for. I don't love him overall as a wide receiver, but I think as somebody that you can design touches for, you know, it's in like every single game you watch, like he creates 20, 25, 30 yards after the catch, after contact by just like not being tackled. Like it's not like he's making people miss. Like he's just flat out like running through tackles, running people over. So I am curious what the Chargers specifically would look at with a guy like Malachi Corley.
Yeah, he's not. So the way we have it ranked is by the consensus board. If you're watching, the numbers are where they're ranked on the consensus board, not our rankings, not how I'd rank these guys.
Yeah.
Corley, I think you and I both agree, it's a bit sight unseen with the stuff down the field, right? So I think that's partially why he's not as high for me. A lot of manufactured stuff. But where I do roll my eyes every year at the Keenan Allen comps for some players, or the Deebo comps like you mentioned, I kind of get it with him. This guy was a running back. And I believe he was recruited to play corner, or maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. This guy was not initially like a receiver. He's a running back. He's 215. He's a big guy. Some guys are maybe like really tall and two something. He's, you know, mid-size and 215. very difficult to tackle. Love what he does through contact. Pretty good RAS overall as well. For the deployable side, like I feel like I am curious because Roman Wilson and Ricky Pearsall really feel like those guys that are moved all over the line of scrimmage and then deployed from there. Roman Wilson in particular, like they motioned him like crazy had him run like an out route, like or something. And that was a great role for him because he's so fast. I can see why they thought he would run like a 4.21 or whatever it was at the combo. Like they thought he would run one of the fastest 40s. He didn't, but he was still very fast. The way they deployed him and Pearsall, I thought were similar enough. So that kind of falls into the way they would move Malik Nabers at LSU to get him, you know, not free touches, but yeah, free touches, like manufactured touches in a way that gets the ball in their hands.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, you know, that's a tie I've had a really difficult time breaking. I keep on going back and forth. You know, one day I look at like, cause Ricky Pearsall is like 6'1" and Roman Wilson's 5'11". So like one day I was just like, oh, like, man, he's taller. Like he could do more things. And then I watched Roman Wilson again. And I'm like, damn, man, he's so good. This group of day two wide receivers, though, I really like all of them. I think Jalen McMillan, one thing that I think is a little bit underrated there is that of the Washington receivers, McMillan was actually the highest rated recruit coming out of high school. So maybe there's some untapped potential there. There's a lot of, injury risk as well. That's kind of what led to Jalen Polk's rise is McMillan was injured. But I want to say he's 9th in our composite rankings in yards after catch per reception. So he is somebody who can create. On day three, you watched Jacob Cowing from Arizona after we did our My Guys and said that he would have been a My Guy had you watched him earlier. So what did you like about Cowing and how could you see him fit into this specific role?
Yeah, he's just a ball fun to watch. He's competitive. He's intelligent. He's very quick. And I like a lot of the film that was there, but it started to get to the point where, and I posted the clip, like he's 168 pounds, I believe. And he's out there taking DBs and planting him in the dirt. Like I just like that stuff. That's a Harbaugh thing. That's a My Guy thing. Guys that play above their size, they punch up, they're fighting above their weight class and they're managing to be successful there. So I loved him quite a bit. It's kind of, I can't remember the other player we mentioned. This is like the same kind of thing for Darius Davis, but like, it's the sort of like speed contact versus like balance contact sort of thing. So like he's fast enough to break all the tackles and he is great after the catch. And Arizona used him quite a bit after the catch, quick game, etc. Arizona's offense is actually a ball of fun, in my opinion. I missed the game where they turned it over 6 times and won.
Yeah, that's because they changed quarterbacks. You watched the change of quarterbacks and it became done.
Gotcha. Anyway, so he's fast enough to break tackles, you know, break angles, beat angles, etc. So I liked him quite a bit. And the way that he's so creative in the way he gets open. It's not super common to see how he gets open. That doesn't always mean it's good. Sometimes maybe it can take too long, right? There's a criticism of how long it takes you to get open sometimes, but it reminded me instantly of Hunter Renfrow and the way that he got open against the Chargers. We've seen it several times. I believe Josh McDaniels didn't like Hunter Renfrow because of the way he would get open, whereas Gruden kind of let him, you know, do whatever he wanted and it worked. So I really liked Cowing for that specifically. I liked the way he was able to like just do something a little bit different to get open. And maybe it wasn't completely like a standard, like plant go, like whatever it was, but it was a lot of fun to watch. And then I looked at his RAS comp against Hunter Renfrow. It was an awful comparison. They were just two both like short, like slot guys. And that was it. The comp that did come up as almost a perfect comp was Tank Dell. I didn't watch Tank Dell last year, but not a bad spot to be in.
Yeah, I think as somebody who watches like mostly Chargers games, like a lot of my brain, like comparison always goes to Charger games. Mm-hmm. Cowing actually kind of reminded me of Eddie Royal.
Love that too. Yep.
Yeah. Great. So I think just like the creativity, the toughness. I was watching Dekamarian Richardson, the corner from Mississippi State. That was the opening game where Arizona's quarterback turned the ball over 6 times in the first half. And then they actually came back and won the game. It was just kind of a cluster. But, Jacob Cowing was running by the Mississippi State slot corners like all day long. And they were a couple times where he tried to match him up with the safety. It just did not go well. I just felt like he was open, all game long. And then there was a couple touchdowns where that Cowan created a touchdown for himself, just like run after the catch. And then Arizona has a wide receiver who could potentially be like in the wide receiver one mix next year. Number four, I forget his name right now.
Yeah.
Dang it, I should know this. But Cowan created a touchdown for him by blocking. So there's just like a guy who does a lot of the dirty work over the middle. He is undersized for sure, but I like his tape a lot. Anaya Smith was not really on my radar until I was listening to the bootleg guys on the stock exchange. And EJ Snyder loves Anaya Smith and like kind of half jokingly was going to take him in the first round of that exercise. But, you know, he's 141st on the consensus board. But you know, in Tyler's composite rankings that he did, there was 36 receivers who qualified, and Anaya Smith was 11th in that board, specifically fifth in yards after catch per reception. So I think from an athletic profile, like I would peg Anaya Smith as the closest comparison to what Malik Nabers gives you from a juice. I love the way that Anaya Smith can, he's so quick when he turns from a receiver to a runner. Malik Nabers has that attribute as well. And just his ability to go from a static catch to I'm going to go get 10, 12 yards after the catch. There's so much burst that he has to the table. So from a pure athletic standpoint, I think Nabers to Smith is probably like the cleanest translation.
Yeah, I love that. I think that absolutely in terms of the parameters you've set, right? He's, I don't know, Devon Achane is not like the best comp because he's a running back, but the same kind of sense of like ball in the hands, gone, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And maybe that's all he had or all that we liked from him coming out of college, but like it works. And so that sort of thing, like you mentioned, like just the complete get the ball in the hands and fly. I do think Smith is one of the best at that for sure.
Yeah, and as Shen points out, he's a little undersized, but the Ravens drafted Devin Duvernay, and they used him in yards after catch stuff for 4 years. And not to say that he was a great receiver.
How big is Zay Flowers?
Yeah, Zay Flowers is not very, very big either.
He's a 5'9", buck 82.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you've met me, you've met Zay Flowers.
We're in the era of small receivers, basically. I have not watched UTSA Josh Cephas, but he ranks very well in the composite rankings as well. Yards after catch again is his specialty here.
Yeah, that's, I can't say he's very high on my board specifically, but I do believe that if we're just looking at Yak, absolutely. I think Alex really likes Cephas as well. But yeah, he's pretty solid.
All right, let's get to the next one here. If you miss out on Chris Jenkins and Tavondre Sweat as day two space-eating defensive tackles, granted, Tavondre Sweat might be a day three pick, but he's a day two talent.
Yeah.
Legal situation there is certainly something to keep an eye on. But this is a smaller list, and most of these ones are going to be smaller here. But these are specific, like, run-stuffing, one-tech, two-technique kind of defensive tackles. We have Texas A&M's McKinley Jackson, Northern Iowa's Christian Boyd, LSU's Jordan Jefferson, Georgia's Zion Log.
Sure.
One of those. And then Cincinnati's Jawan Briggs here. So Christian Boyd is a fast rising defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
It was not a combine invite, but he was fantastic at the Shrine Bowl, according to people who were there. There's a lot of fans about Christian Boyd. You watched him recently. What was your takeaway from Christian Boyd?
Yeah, for all the talk of, and he deserves it, Mason McCormick being very strong and powerful, Christian Boyd's the only one who said, oh yeah, and went right back at him and consistently was able
so
to.
So much fun to watch.
Yeah, great matchup. And I wish I had the mindset of knowing Boyd and who he was while watching it, because I only had watched for McCormick. But watching again, I was like, wow, I was really impressed. This guy was displacing McCormick quite a bit. I think of these guys here, he's the least likely to just be like the space eater guy. Sure. I think he can do more, but I think just based on the raw traits that he has and how he was able to go up against McCormick, I think he still belongs in here.
Yeah, I think he does too. I think he can bring more to the table. I do think he can kick out to, you know, the three tech and four tech and do some things like that. But I do think he could also be the nose. So the Chargers specifically, I'm very curious about how they kind of look at this defensive line room, because, you know, Puna Ford supposedly is going to be kind of their nose tackle, two tech. It's also what Otito Ogbonia is going to be. And then you have Morgan Fox type, who's your pass rushing. player. But I do think that this is kind of the priority, right, for this defensive group, is to have pocket pushers and run stuffers. Christian Boyd, I think, can do more than that. In the same vein, where I do think Chris Jenkins has some untapped pass rush potential. So to me, in terms of Jenkins, I think Christian Boyd is very clearly like your discount version of that guy. Yeah. Devondre Sweat, it's very difficult to find a duplicate because of his 360-pound profile. But from a play style standpoint, I think Jordan Jefferson is pretty close to that. One of my favorite things about Sweat is, like, when he is one-on-one, he just has such a violent strike to him to be able to shed blockers. And then, you know, he does have some quick juice to him to be able to get to the ground. I think Jordan Jefferson has that. But he did take on a lot of double teams. This is the defensive line that obviously features Mekhi Wingo, who's the kind of pass rushing defensive tackle from LSU. And then Mason Smith is kind of your three tech, four tech run defense guy. So Jordan Jefferson was their two gapper, and he fits the size profile that the Chargers really like, I think, at this position. And I do like his ability to anchor against double teams. Mm. He kind of gave me Austin Johnson vibes. I know Austin Johnson didn't end super well. The injury just kind of sapped him, unfortunately. But when Austin Johnson was healthy, you know, he was a fantastic run-plugging defensive tackle for the Chargers. And I think Jordan Jefferson has some of that in his game.
Nice. I'll have to watch him. Thomas Martinez pointed him out. Guy's been, I asked him one time, like, please just let me know who the big, you know, one tech, zero tech kind of guys are in this class. And he keeps sending me guys to watch, and I keep trying to watch these guys, but didn't get to Jordan Jefferson. So every year there's a good or pretty good LSU interior defensive lineman. Like,
this
every
year there's three.
Yeah, which I can't believe there's three of them. Pretty good defensive unit usually. So I'll give him a look.
Hanan Deary asking about Tyler Davis from Clemson. I have not watched him specifically yet. I know you have, right?
Yeah, I have. I think he's I really like the balance he has as a player. I don't think he specifically fits into this category. I think, you know, solid run defender, pretty decent pass rusher. I don't think he really fits into like this more like power, space eating, run defender, run first specific kind of guy. But I do like him. I like him more than some of these. Like, I like him more than McKinley Jackson. I don't like him specifically.
I didn't like McKinley Jackson very much either.
Some of these boards, man, I feel like I could almost take the way they're ranked and flip them, because McKinley Jackson, I'm curious how much of it is just the fact that he is a certain specimen and how big he is, because I watched him thinking like, okay, here's this enormous guy. I think he was pretty highly recruited. I think he was supposed to have a really big year. And man, I was not happy watching that. It doesn't necessarily mean that like these guys need a ton of production, but when I looked up the production to see what kind of games I was about to get into, and it's like zero pressures one run stop, and I'm like, oh boy. Again, not that that isn't a requirement, but the tape also wasn't my favorite either.
You did like Georgia's Zion Logue, though. I think.
Oh, yeah. 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 The dude plays like 15 plays a game. I think he's what many people thought Jordan Davis was or something. But he's got a ton of power. He's a ton of fun to him. I don't know Georgia's situation enough. There's not like a ton of Georgia defenders overall this year, at least not in years previous. So I don't know why he had the limited role that he did. But watching him in that limited capacity, he's got a ton of power, was like just had that kind of, hello, I'm a Georgia, probably 5-star recruit, and I am significantly stronger and more talented than you are. So he's a bit of a freak later on that I think it'd be worth a look.
All right. There you go. All right. Next one here. If you don't get one of the big three centers, Jackson Powers Johnson, who could be had at 37, apparently, according to a lot of people, Jackson Harris Johnson is falling in the draft. Zach Frazier and then Graham Barton, you know, depending on how you view, how you view him. I have a quick take on this. I actually have Graham Barton as my interior offensive lineman number one.
Dang it, I thought I was going to be the first one. Oh, no.
Sorry.
What a good call.
Yeah. Graham Barton reminds me so much of like Elijah Vera Tucker. I think he can play tackle, but I think he's just like going to be an awesome guard, potentially could play center for you. I there's no bad tape on Graham Barton. It's impossible to find a rep where he loses poorly. Jackson Paris Johnson is a ton of fun. He's a knockdown king. There's some technique issues that I think need to be talked about. And then also potentially some medical things, which are the reasons why he's potentially falling. Like Peter Schrager did his mock draft today. He does that exclusively off of like what he is hearing from the league. And he did not even have Jackson Paris Johnson in the first round. So potentially a faller in the draft to keep an eye on.
Yeah, that's obviously a bummer. Yeah, Barton, as soon as I watched him, and he was almost a my guy for me, just like I've loved watching him play, was so good. I completely understand why some, you know, analysts or whoever like him more. And yeah, if you can, in theory, potentially even play tackle, definitely guard and probably center as well, you're pretty valuable. And I loved watching Barton's tape so much. So yeah, he's going to be, if I have Fautanu as an interior offensive lineman, which I think I will, I think he'll end up being number two for me behind Fautanu. Okay. But he will be ahead of Jackson Paris Johnson.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Wanted to give this a shout out, going back to the defensive tackles real quickly. Gavino Borka is in here. He says Alabama's Justin, I'm not even going to try and say that last name, Justin E from Alabama is worth a watch. He loves his ability to play low, stack and shed blocks to redirect the run. Maybe the best run defending defensive tackle. Big reason why Michigan struggled to run at times. So, Alabama and Michigan definitely have similar types at defensive tackle. So he is on my list as well to watch before Thursday.
Yeah, he is. I think he's 92. He stood out so much for me watching. So I watched Chris Braswell and I went, well, I really like this other guy. Every time I don't watch Justin E, I end up falling in love with what he's doing. So I can't wait to actually go out and grade him.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. This is, these are the centers here. This is a stack center class. We very rarely get this many quality centers here. Mm-hmm. So we have Arkansas, Bo Limmer. He's 122nd on the consensus board. South Dakota State's Mason McCormick, who is 142nd. You mentioned him earlier when talking about Christian Boyd. Penn State's Hunter Norzad, a favorite of the show. Wisconsin's Tanner Bordellini, and then Miami's Matt Lee. So we've talked a lot about each of these individuals. Is there one of them, Tyler, that maybe most closely resembles what people think of Jackson Paris Johnson? Because he's kind of like the favorite of Chargers fans.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think then that would be Norzad. I actually think those first two guys in Limmer potentially and then McCormick, I think could fit. It's been a while since I've watched Limmer because I think he was the first center I've watched. I think those guys fit. Did Jackson Paris Johnson test?
No, because he had an injury.
Okay, because Bordellini is a pretty good athlete, one of the best athletes. I don't know that Jackson Paris Johnson was quite that. Maybe McCormick. Norzad, I don't know. Like, I think he's the best Harbaugh fit. I don't think he best resembles necessarily the Jackson Paris Johnson.
Yeah. I would say McCormick stylistically is probably that guy. Mm-hmm. Bo Limmer to me is a Zach Frazier replacement. I think Limmer was even a former wrestler as well, like Zach Frazier was. Graham Barton's hard to place down because like I think he could play center, but I haven't watched him play center. So I think that one's harder to nail down. But I would say McCormick would be your Thomas Martinez agrees. And I think McCormick is your Paris Johnson replacement specifically. Granted, he could also play guard. And then Limmer, I think, would be the Frazier replacement.
I actually think Barton Norzad could be Barton. I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, Barton does the snatch pretty well, too. And that's one of Norzad's specialties that I love so much. Did you watch the Brandon Thorne episode with Hunter Norzad?
I did, and I saw that came up, though.
Yeah, so there was a clip of Penn State was playing Wisconsin? No, Illinois, excuse me. And there's like a very specific linebacker blitz that Illinois likes to run. And Hunter Norzad told Brandon Thorne that they like drilled that look down and the linebacker came, they were ready for it. and Hunter Norzad ended up just like completely burying the linebacker. This is like the first quarter, and they never ran that blitz again because the linebacker just did not want any part of it. So
yeah,
Norzad and Barton, I could see being pretty similar.
Yeah. So we'll see what the Chargers end up going for. It really depends on what they are going for. Based on almost every other thing ever for Harbaugh and the Ravens, it feels like Norzad and McCormick. And then you throw in all of a sudden Tyler Linderbaum and things kind of change. Like that was just a very different kind of center. And that was in the first round. So I'm curious what they'll do this year.
Yeah, I think the guard center flexibility is a real thing for them. So I think that is a priority. So Tanner Bordeley, probably not so much. Okay, Tyler, you want to handle this one?
Sure. So if you pass on Trey Benson and Jonathan Brooks and want the next best, most complete backs, so these are guys that are, you know, good rushers and they're good pass catchers, then you can go ahead and draft, I think. Early on day three, looking at Kentucky's Ray Davis or Notre Dame's Audric Estime, or later on day three, Marshall's Rasheen Ali or Washington's Dylan Johnson.
Yeah, so these are guys that are equally good at both. We've kind of hit on some like pass catchers like a Blake Watson or, you know, the running types like a Braylon Allen. But these guys are all adept pass catchers as well as pass protectors, in my opinion. I love watching the way Audric Estime pass protects. We've talked about Ray Davis quite a lot already on the show. It was cool to see Daniel Popper yesterday. Loves Ray Davis as well. So he kind of sounds like a favorite. But what's your stance on Audric Estime, the pass catcher?
Great question. I actually didn't think he would be as high on the statistic rankings as he was, having watched him on film. In fact, not the only reason, I feel bad saying it, but really the main reason I have him on here is because he ranks so highly in yards after the catch per reception, I believe, in our composite rankings. So he was worth keeping on here because he was so balanced. I think when we talked about, oh goodness, who was it a few days ago? Maybe it was Ray Davis. Of the guys that were both like after contact and yards per route run guys, I think Estime was up there. So I think in yards per route run, I think not yak per reception. But anyway, yards per run, I think he was pretty solid there. So I think he's worth mentioning.
No, I definitely agree. In terms of yards per route run, I think people will be surprised. Like I pictured when we came up with this specific slide, I was like, oh, Marshawn Lloyd, like this is going to be the guy.
Sure.
Although you could argue that he's maybe in that same kind of tier as them. But Audric Estime is actually ranks higher in yards per route run ahead of Marshawn Lloyd. And same thing with Will Shipley. And Will Shipley is kind of pegged as like this NFL receiving back. And so some of it is definitely screens. But I think the ability to get him out in space is fantastic. I really liked his ability to run choice routes out of the backfield as well. You're not going to like do vertical stuff with him by any means. Ray Davis can do that. but Estime is somebody who I think there's a lot of untapped potential there with his pass catching ability. You know, Notre Dame didn't use him a ton in that way, but in a complementary role where he could work in on third downs more often, I would really like to see Estime get that chance.
Yeah, I would agree. Like Rasheen Ali, more so for like the check down version, but Dylan Johnson was a lot of fun to watch. They had him line up outside and run like curls or comebacks quite a bit. So I think that was really interesting thing to add to his game. So yeah, a couple of really fun guys in this class.
Yeah, Dylan Johnson just has the injury history, but
yeah,
the film it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Okay, if you pass on an offensive tackle in round one and would like to find someone to replace Trey Pipkins in 2025 who fits the Harbaugh-Hortiz mold, this is kind of the group that we're talking about. So Arjun pointed this out. You're looking for size. You're looking for length. And I think you're looking for strong, violent hands. Like I do think J.C. Latham is kind of a very good fit for them. Mm-hmm. But these are the offensive tackles. The top of the offensive tackle class is fantastic. You have this group as well, which is made up of Oklahoma's Tyler Guyton, Houston's Patrick Paul, Notre Dame's Blake Fisher, we talked about on the My Guy episode, Texas's Christian Jones, and then TCU's Brandon Coleman. I put Coleman on here. He has the size, he has the length, but there are some athletic concerns. A lot of people think he is a guard, but he did play tackle strictly at TCU. So wanted to mention him at least because of the physical measurements, but some people do have him out there as a guard, which is why he has an asterisk next to his name.
Yeah, I've not watched Coleman. I think I really almost like want to do the whole episode exclusively for this because, like, again, I saw so much like, yeah, like if you miss out on J.C. Latham, go get Rosengarten. I'm like, I don't think that's the exact same kind of offensive lineman.
Not even close.
So again, like we're trying to find guys that are good matches. And I think Guyton fits that. Not that I love his film necessarily, but I feel like you could coach him up and have a lot of fun with the tools there. Certainly fits. Patrick Paul is more athletic than a lot of the Ravens tackles that they've taken before, of those offensive linemen, but he's got the nastiness to him. Fisher, I think he's a good like mix. And then Christian Jones plays bigger than I think his RAS ended up being. We're looking at the numbers, and it's like, that's not that great. But so these are some of the names to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think Patrick Paul would be like my best case scenario after like the top guys, just from, you know, a physical profile standpoint. And I think there was a while where he was like getting like first round hype, and I never really bought that. But as a developmental option, like in like the 40s or 50s, I would be about it. And I think this is a guy who would be perfect for the chart. Like the Chargers, I think, have more needs than developmental tackle, but in an ideal world from that position standpoint, taking a guy like Patrick Paul, letting him sit for a year, get with Ben Herbert, sit behind Trey Pipkins and these guys, and then be your right tackle in 2025 and beyond, I think that would be a great scenario for this offensive line. I just don't know if the Chargers can make that work.
Yeah, the whole offensive line situation is so tricky for the Chargers, but I'd rather take a guy on day two and make that work for a year and try to figure out, and then in 2025 you have your guy, then, you know, try something in round one.
Yeah. So I'm kind of the belief that they should take somebody to challenge for right guard, but yeah, is what it is. All right. Before we get back to the wide receiver, we do have to pay the bills over here. So Tyler, why don't you tell our listeners about Prize Picks?
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah. Prize Picks. Ton of fun. I'm sure as soon as the draft is over, there's going to be so many different options for you guys to use on Prize Picks. It's skill-based, real money daily fantasy sports game. Pick 2 to 6 players, and if they'll get more or if they'll get less, and that's it. There's ghouls and goblins and all sorts of fun stuff. There's like Taco Tuesday they have on there, all sorts of fun entries. They do specials as well. You know, there's some specials where it's like, will Caitlin Clark get more than 0.5 points? So you hit the more and you take the free easy free win money. There. Yep. Free, absolutely. So to make your selections, go to prizepicks.com/guilty. For a first deposit match up to $100 today.
Yeah, 100%. Next one here is our friends over at Unified Health, Unified Healing. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness that centers around the new EE system, which is the Energy Enhancement System. If you haven't heard of that yet, you'll want to listen up because this technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you are a podcaster, a power lifter, or whatever the case may be, you'll be sure to check out hundreds of other locations across the globe, including Orange County, Fresno, wherever you're at. So definitely please go check them out. If you're interested in experiencing the new EE system technology for yourself, you can go to unifiedhealing.com/guilty to learn more and find a center near you. Again, that is unifiedhealing.com/guilty.
Alrighty. Let's get back to the football.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so if you trade back and you miss out on a Brian Thomas Jr., but you want to add a vertical threat later in the draft, these are the guys that you are looking on. So first and foremost, on day two, you're looking at Oregon's Troy Franklin. I know there's a lot of Chargers fans out there that like him. North Carolina's Tez Walker, and then Central Florida's Javon Baker. You like Tez Walker more than I did. So let's talk about Tez Walker. I feel like we've talked about the other guys a little bit here and there. What did you like about Tez Walker?
The fact that he was faster than everybody else out there. One of the few guys that is just genuinely faster than I think his 40 time is. He's moved down for me recently. So I'm curious where we currently would have him, but I still did like him more than you. I thought there was enough there on some of the perimeter work. I thought there was enough there on the shallow crossers to warrant him being a bit better than some just like straight on only run fast guys. I think there's a lot of his game that he has to develop for sure, but I think he's got the one thing that's like, yeah, that's pretty good. So I just think what he was able to do down the field to beat corners playing 10 yards off of him and still get past them on a go ball was pretty impressive. But there's not a ton of nuance to his game. Again, there's not of like variety to the game. So he is ranked kind of lowish for me, but I just love what he was able to do as a downfield option.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm a little bit concerned about the drops in the same way that I am with Troy Franklin. Of this trio, I would say Javon Baker has the best hands comfortably, but
yeah,
he's also the slowest of the bunch. I think he was like a 4.55 kind of guy. Troy Franklin, Tez Walker, definitely faster. Baker is more of kind of wins with timing, wins with his vertical jump, doesn't drop passes, so he's a different kind of vertical threat. But is there one of those three that maybe fits a Brian Thomas constellation best for you?
Oh geez, because Brian Thomas is obviously such a special option there. Of the three, I probably would bet on Javon Baker being the better of the three. I don't like Franklin a whole lot. We talked about that. Talked about that quite a bit, and a lot of the risk associated with taking him and the combine just slub that he put up. It wasn't great. So I think Javon Baker is maybe the best of the three. I don't know that he's the most replaceable or most like replicable, but of those three, yeah, probably Baker.
It looks like some people in the chat are saying that YouTube is glitching out.
Are we glitchy or is your YouTube glitchy?
JD Nord, if you want to let us know if you're still in the chat, what might be going on there. Interesting.
I'll tell you right now that I just turned on our own live stream and I'm listening to you do an ad read that sounded fine, so I think we're okay.
Okay. Looks good. Other people are saying that looks good.
Okay. Although I do say that it says that two people are watching us. Yeah, we literally just had three comments. So I don't know what happened. so we have two viewers. We're back to square one.
All right. Interesting. Everybody says that it's fine. All right. Cool, cool, cool. Appreciate you guys. Okay. I really want to talk about Taj Washington in this same kind of vein. Different physical molds. But when you put the list together of composite rankings, I like Taj Washington, but then I saw him at number one on the composite rankings and was very, very surprised. The film is very good. It's a lot of fun. Very explosive athlete. This is kind of a guy who could fit in the Malik Nabers category to me and also in the Brian Thomas category. So there's a lot to like for me from Taj Washington from an explosiveness profile. You know, he can do the short area stuff. He can do the vertical stuff. A lot of people like to talk about Caleb Williams and not having a supporting cast. I would definitely encourage them to go back and watch Taj Washington because I really like Taj Washington quite a bit.
Yeah, he's awesome. I agree with the whole Malik Nabers part because the yak is also there. I just think when it comes down to it, like Caleb Williams launches down the field. And I think what's so great about Taj Washington is he always came up with it. Like he always tracked the ball super well. Obviously not the biggest guy, but you know, heck of an athlete, at least fast enough to get down there. Always came down with it. Really reliable. Kind of like another Marvin Mims type, I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah, I really, really liked him. I thought the way he played was wonderful. And I think he's only gone down the consensus board during this process. And I don't get it. Like, I understand he's not going to develop into what, like, Polk could be as a future wide receiver one, maybe. Who, by the way, Schrager thinks could go in the first round. But Washington is a special talent. And I think him as far back as he is a surprise.
Yeah, like him being, you know, 204 is kind of crazy to me. I was just going to look up to see Mock Draftable doesn't have him on there, but I wonder who his athletic comparisons are, because the Marvin Mims thing, I hadn't thought of that, but that one definitely checks out. Have you watched Jamari Thrash? You can talk about him for a bit.
Yeah, so Thrash, I actually have him on here. I've seen him catch one deep pass for a touchdown. I can't recall which team it was, but it was a prevent, or should have been prevent defense. 16 seconds left, and the safety was just like, we'll get the long ball. So Thrash caught that one, and he's been talked about more as a deep threat, you know, kind of guy. And I've seen some evaluations of him of like that, but I didn't really think of him like that. I saw him more of as like a possession kind of like intermediate receiver than a deep threat. So he's actually mostly on here because of the way the film guys perceive him. Not necessarily what I saw in the games that I watched. There was a lot of junk route stuff with Thrash at Louisville. And I don't mean that like anything against him. It was just, you run fast and clear out these guys, or you block for these guys, or you motion this way and we'll go the other way. So it's kind of it might be kind of a boring watch for some people to watch him all the way through, because there was so much junk stuff in there because he was asked to do stuff for other guys. But then Louisville for like five plays would go, all right, let's get it to Thrash, and it's like slant and go, like it's out routes, it's corners, it's go routes, like it's beautiful stuff. They just didn't get him involved a ton. So
yeah, he's on my list to check out too. But Taj Washington, man, surprisingly only ran a 4.52. That was
really
like, yeah.
He's okay, much faster than lost that. Tape. Yeah, he is. There's enough plays to at least say that, or the DBs all ran a 4.7. So
yeah, yeah, he cooked a lot of Pac-12 corners. I wanted to touch on this question real quick from Kareem. Is Malik Nabers strictly a slot receiver for you guys?
No, you wouldn't consider him a big X by any means. But I don't think he's strictly a slot receiver. I just think you get him as open as you possibly can. You scheme to do the most incredible things he can with the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really make him a slot. Could make him a Z. He's just not your big X type. That's it.
Yeah, I don't think you want him doing the X stuff. Although LSU did give him some opportunities to do that. It didn't always go well. But I think as a backside Z, I think as a slot, I think either way, you know, he can make plays from either spot. But getting him in the slot is just almost unfair because he eats up so much ground so fast. Getting him against off coverage is just it's just a killer.
Yeah, it is. Also, Tez Walker's got a great rep against Nate Wiggins. He runs like a 4.21. So I really like that rep because he burned straight past him.
The one time.
Hey. You only need one.
Okay. This is the cornerback conversation. If you pass on Quinyon Mitchell and Nate Wiggins, aforementioned Nate Wiggins, and want another elite athlete, these are your guys at outside corner on day two. Again, these are specific athletic profiles. So we have Rutgers' Max Melton at 57th on the consensus board, Oregon's Kyrie Jackson at 91st, Notre Dame's Cam Hart at 94, Boston College Elijah Jones at 125th on the consensus board, and then Mississippi State's DeCamarion Richardson, who is 186th. Who do you want to highlight here, Tyler?
We've highlighted the first three before in Melton, Jackson, Hart. Jackson, Hart, definitely. But Melton, I think, and he'll be up on here in a different spot, but Melton is extremely athletic. And if Jesse Minter is looking for an athletic player, Melton is certainly that. So I think Melton is great there. His missed tackle rate is overblown. I think he's a much better tackler. than I think the missed tackle rate showed. And I have not watched Jones or Richardson, so you'd have to take it from here.
Yeah, Richardson, I watched him last night. I think there's he's definitely a work in progress. So I think, you know, we've kind of highlighted the Chargers need to take two cornerbacks. This is a guy who probably sits for a year and learns behind a Fulton and Asante Samuel Jr. You know, Mississippi State, like a lot of the college defenses, it's a ton of like, you know, you're basically playing like cover four the entire game, which is just, it's not a ton of valuable reps from a cornerback standpoint. He had help over the top on every single rep, I felt like. There were definitely some times where Malik Nabers beat him over the top from what I saw. There were some times where their Arizona receivers beat him over the top. But I think it's just strictly like technique and understanding of leverage that kind of gets him beat. So he's a guy who has a lot of the great athletic traits that you are looking for. I think his arm length is over 32 inches. He ran sub 4.4. He's 6'2". This is a physical profile that I think the Chargers could really kind of look for on day two in the draft. So I was messaging back and forth with Thomas Martinez. He kind of gave me like cover three Gus Bradley, 2019, 2020, Michael Davis. Like there's some of that in there where it's like, you know, he's in good position, but just like doesn't get his head around, or there's just like some misunderstanding of like leverages and things like that.
Yeah.
But then the good reps are a lot of fun to watch. And I think the one thing I know he'll do is he will tackle. Like, he is a guy who will come up and play the run. He'll play the pass. He did have a couple really high quality tackles against the Arizona receivers. So it's just kind of a dart throw. It's not really like this is guy is going to be our starter. Whereas the top three guys, I would be comfortable with them being a starter for the Chargers. Richardson is more of a day three dart throw.
Okay. Well, to give him a watch. Sounds good, though. I'm glad this corner class has some depth in it. That's great.
Yeah.
Next up, if you miss out on Missouri's Darius Robinson and want to add a versatile power rusher later on, some names we thought of on day two: Washington's Braylon Trice, then Ole Miss's edge rusher Cedric Johnson, Houston's Nelson Caesar, and Michigan's Braden McGregor. Caesar, I think, is a bit more balanced, but I think he's got enough power to him. Johnson is pretty much only power, I think. McGregor was the more powerful of the two for Michigan. And Braylon Trice is next on my list. I have not watched him, but I'm glad you added him here because I didn't know that he was considered something like that.
Yeah, I think Darius Robinson, the role like for the Chargers is a very similar role to what McGregor plays, right? And obviously McGregor is a natural translation here. You watch McGregor and he will play mostly as an edge rusher on the outside on early downs. He'll kick inside on pass rushing downs, very similar to how like the origins of the Morgan Fox role came about. You know, this is a guy who is mostly an edge rusher, kicks inside. Obviously, Morgan Fox has become more of an inside rusher almost exclusively at this point in his career. But when Morgan Fox got his like push out with the Rams, like that's what he was doing. And that's the kind of role I think you're envisioning here. Darius Robinson is like all power, and he's a former defensive tackle, and it shows up. But you watch his game against Georgia, and it's one of the best edge rusher games I've watched on tape this year. He was just having a field day against those guys. Amarius Mims did not play in that game, but it is what it is. So if you're looking for guys who can play on the outside, kick inside, I think this is your group. McGregor obviously is a very natural piece to take later on in the draft, and I think it's a role the Chargers do need, because you have Thule who can move around. They don't really move around Joey and Khalil very much. Like, they're more of the outside edge rushers. I think they could use one more guy who could kind of move across the line. Darius Robinson would be a lot of fun. He's kind of more like the late 20s, though. So I'm not focused in on McGregor, but I think like there are some fun flashes there on tape.
Yeah, I agree. I can take the, or do you want to?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, cool. So if you miss out on Brock Bowers and Jatavion Sanders and want to add a receiving tight end later on, I needed you to fill out this one for me because I did not watch half of these guys. So we have Ohio State's Cade Stover, TCU's Jared Wiley, who I forget, was it Pelissero who said could be tight end two?
Tight end two. It blew my mind. I was like, oh, what? Excuse me?
There's a lot of things being thrown around, but it is draft season. Florida State's Jaheim Bell, Colorado State's Dalen Holker, Iowa's Eric All, and Arizona's Tanner McLaughlin. And I almost like the bottom of this list more than the top of it.
Yeah, I struggle with like the Cade Stover one because I do think he is a good blocker. I wasn't sure where to put him because these other guys I think could all kind of do some more slot things. Dan brings up Ben Sinnott. This list to me is like leaning more big receiver than like a true blocking tight end. So that's why Sinnott didn't make it. I couldn't really decide if I wanted to have Cade Stover on here, but I ended up putting him on here. So really, I think the interesting one here, I didn't know this until today, but Jaheim Bell's athletic comp is actually Isaiah Likely, who the Ravens did draft in 2019 or 2020. So there is a very specific role in the Greg Roman offense that does call for kind of a short area yards after catch move tight end. And Jaheim Bell fits like a glove compared to Isaiah Likely.
Cool. I'll take your word for it. That's interesting. I think I want to say Likely was 2022.
Oh, I thought he was
When I was watching film.
Okay. I thought he was a while ago, but it makes sense because this past year was really like the first year where he kind of like
broke
out.
Yeah, I think it was 2022. Good. Cool. Anyways. Yeah, I'll watch Jaheim. I will watch Jaheim Bell then for that alone.
I watched and graded Tanner McLaughlin last night. I think, like you said on Twitter the other day, he's a guy that draft media, I think, is really underrating in this process. And I don't really understand why. Like, the numbers are good. He's always popping on tape. You know, the athletic profile is solid. I don't understand that one. Eric All being 178th on the draft consensus.
I get that one.
I get what, because there's so many medical concerns and there's so few games played. McLaughlin at 205, I would definitely take him over Wiley or Jaheim Bell after grading both of them.
Gotcha. I think I have Theo Johnson a little bit higher than McLaughlin, but it's not that much higher in terms of grade. And the difference between them is a whole 100 on the consensus board. Like, I just, I don't quite see it. Yeah. So glad you liked him at least.
Yeah. No, I liked him a lot. I was definitely a surprise because, like, I watched Arizona all season long and I only really remembered, like, the receivers, and the receivers are pretty good.
Yeah.
But then watching the tape, like, McLaughlin is just all over the place blocking on the perimeter. He's not a great inline blocker, but he'll block on the perimeter. But just consistently, like, just creating yards after catch kind of reminded me, like, stylistically of a Luke Musgrave, like, just so good
at
catch and run, and just the juice is instant there. So Musgrave was very, like, played two games last year or 2 years ago.
They were awesome.
They were so much fun. But the just his ability to catch and run was a lot of fun to watch. There were constantly times where I was like, oh, like, the safety's gonna catch him, and then he just kept on running by him. So underrated athlete for sure.
Yeah, I think so. All right, next up, if you pass on Mike Sainristil in round two and want to find another slot / hybrid corner option, so not necessarily an outside guy, but some slot, some safety, that sort of thing, you can go with Georgia's Kamari Lassiter, Rutgers' Max Melton, Missouri's Chris Abrams Drain, or Auburn's DJ James on day two. Or on day three, you can look at Louisville's Jarvis Brownlee Jr., Penn State's Kalen King, and Florida State's Jerrion Jones. Have you watched Kalen King, and is he living up to the billing of, like, the most disliked prospect, I feel like, this entire class? Because this guy has done nothing against him at all, but everyone had such high expectations for him. He had a bad year, and it feels like he is the ugly duckling of this class.
Yeah, so Utah played Penn State in the Rose Bowl 2 years ago. That was Kalen King's, like, best season. And they had some guys opt out of that Rose Bowl. And so, like, everybody was hyping up Kalen King as, like, the best player on Penn State. And then Alex Katzen and I were messaging back and forth, like, the entire season, because the Charger scouts went to, like, 7 Penn State games. And we were like, this has to be for Kalen King. Like, they need a corner. Like, this is the guy. But the season was tough. The Big Ten has a lot of quality wide receivers, right? I mean, he got cooked by Marvin Harrison. He got cooked by Roman Wilson. That's understandable. But then also he didn't play super well at the Senior Bowl. He didn't test very well. Just has not capitalized on his offseason by any means. I was shocked to see that he was at 125. I was expecting like 250 based off of the way that he was talked about.
Yeah.
I think if you move him to the slot, I think there's workable stuff there because I like his toughness. I like his overall mentality. Like, yeah, he'll get cooked from some of these guys, but he was always like up there ready for the challenge. I just think there are definitely some athletic concerns, but I do think he can play in the slot. He's probably going to be a day three pick. So I think there are some things to like, but definitely am concerned about the athletic profile.
Yeah. As far as Louisville's Jarvis Brownlee Jr., there's a lot of discussion about him being, so he was an outside corner. I can't remember if he was at Florida State before or not. He was an outside corner, I believe, at Florida State. Then he was an outside corner at Louisville in 2022. And this past season, they started to make him more of like a slot slash like boxed kind of role player. Still primarily outside, but a little bit more, you know, in the box, in the slot, etc. And I saw a grade, I think it was Bleacher Report, had like a late day three grade on him as a corner, as an outside corner. And I get it. But I actually think he's like an early day three safety type. So I actually honestly almost put Jarvis Brownlee flat out as a safety, in my opinion, because the dude just loves to fight and hit people. He's the most aggressive puncher press kind of guy in the class. One of them. Certainly one of the day three guys. So I like him quite a bit. And then the guys we have, if you're watching, the guys with asterisks, Max Melton, DJ James, they probably play on the outside, but they could play on the inside as well. Like, there's nothing limiting them necessarily to the outside and putting them inside, but they could play inside.
Is Brownlee kind of like a discount version of Brian Branch? Brian Branch awesome, right? But like the whole like safety corner kind of conversation just made me think of Branch last year.
Right. I feel like, okay, with Branch, I've had him as a safety who could play in the slot. You had him more as like corner specifically. But I thought that was a good like back and forth that a lot of people were having. With Brownlee, everyone's like, hey, he's a corner. And I'm like, well, why doesn't he just play box safety? Why doesn't he play in the box and just go hit people? Because he loves doing that. Like, I think he'd be really good in that role. And I think he could play the slot. So I actually feel like I need to put that out into the world because I feel like that's a role that fits him better than what he's being projected as like a later round corner.
Yeah, obviously Branch was much better. I had Branch as like a top 10 player.
Top 10 player. Yeah. Yes.
I just was like, the conversation was like, okay, like it just kind of fell a little similar, but
I get what you mean. Yeah.
Like he's a day three pick here. And I think that's kind of the conversation.
Yeah. The Cooper DeJean is the Brian Branch conversation.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Close enough.
DeJean might be one of the most underrated players by the Chargers fan base in this class. Like, every time I talk about Cooper Jean, he's like, he sucks. I'm like, well, what are you watching that says that he sucks? He's a great tackler. The ball skills are fantastic. He had like three pick sixes in the last 2 years. Like, the ball skills are fantastic. I think he could be like a gadget player on offense. So I don't know why you're watching if you think Cooper Jean sucks. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah, I saw the reaction to your mock. Like, you took two white dudes? I'm like, pretty good, man. Like, I'll give you a subscription to Caddies if you need to go watch some film or something. Like, it's letting me know that people have not watched enough Ladd McConkey or Cooper DeJean.
Yeah, and those are two of the most athletic players at their positions in this class. So, Branch, right. Like, he had, like, a 42-inch vertical on around, like, a 4.44. Like, I don't know.
Anyway.
All right. That's the last one, right?
No, I think we've got two more in here. I don't know. Okay. The stream will never end. We have two viewers currently, it says.
I don't know what's happening with that. Okay, now we're up to eight. Okay. Woo-hoo! I'm so confused because there's a lot of people in the chat, so I don't know. All right. If you pass on Romo Nunze and want a taller physical X receiver later on, this is your group. Oh, I'm sorry. Yep. I did that. This was a tougher one for me to kind of go through. Florida State's Keon Coleman. He plays X. He doesn't play like an X.
Right.
Jalen Polk can definitely play X. I like that one. USC Brendan Rice, he's an option. Michigan Cornelius Johnson, he's an option. Florida State's Johnny Wilson. He's like the size of a tight end. He's like 245 pounds. He's bigger than Jaheim Bell, who was their actual tight end. I threw on Utah's Devon Vele because it just got to a point where I was like, okay, that guy's 5'9", that guy's 5'9", that guy's 5'9", that guy's 5'9". Devon Vele, I know, is 6'3". Like, I know that he can play X. So It was a tougher one to find a Roma Dunze replacement.
Yeah, Thomas Martinez points out maybe we could have put Xavier Leggett on here because we're desperate for names. He doesn't strike me as the same kind, but like we've been like we strain to find also like a Romo Dunze kind of X type in this class. So it was funny because we've gone through this. Look, we have 44 viewers. What happened? We're going crazy. We're going viral. We talked so much about this class. So there's like a different. There's so many different receivers, different types, and flavors for whatever you need. But then I got to this one about like, okay, if we don't take Odunze, who can we find later? It's just his teammate, I think. Like of his group, to me, it's Polk. And that's kind of it. Like in theory, it should be Coleman or it could be Johnny Wilson. Like I think the next closest is Coleman, I guess. But Johnny Wilson, for all his height, like every small DB was just punching up through the ball and his hands knocking that out every time. So it's like, it's not quite Odunze or Polk. Granted, those are two very special talents, but still.
Yeah, I think, you know, if the Chargers are not taking Marvin Harrison Jr. or Romo Dunze, I think Josh Palmer is just your X receiver. Like, I think that's... I think that's what the team would do. You know, Brendan Rice, he met with the team. I'm not a huge fan of his, personally.
If his last name was Rice, he'd be 50 spots down.
Yeah, yeah. 108 is way too high for him. I'm intrigued by Cornelius Johnson, but he's definitely kind of like a project. Like he's not somebody that I think you can play this year.
Gotcha. Well, that's a bummer, Cito. Hopefully we'll find some other guys, but yeah, I'm glad you have Utah's Devon Vele on here. Cause, is it Vele? I'm sorry. Is it Vele?
Vele. Yeah. Interesting journey to play football. He did the LDS church mission thing. He walked on at a community college. He is like 25 years old. He was in college for 7 years. But he's Utah used him as the post Britton Covey punt returner and kick returner. And usually you don't see guys who are like 6'4", 6'4", 6'4", B punt returners. He was actually really good at it. So I think he can play Z. I think he can play X. I think he could do some yards after catch stuff too. But he is older. There's not a ton of production. He more than anyone else got dinged by not having Cam Rising last year because the quarterback situation after Rising was injured was just an atrocity and nobody could throw Devon Bailey the football. But as like a late day three guy, undrafted free agent guy, I think Devon Bailey has a lot of upside there.
Yeah. You mentioned Tyrell Williams because again, all of our comps go to comps for the Chargers. But I get it. Like I totally get it. He was an undrafted free agent too. All that talent, undrafted free agent, worked out okay.
I think this is Tim Patrick's replacement also for what it's worth.
Okay. So there's your Utah segment of the day. I think it's actually our only Utah player, which is a bit of a surprise. If last one, guys, because I know this look, this is the Chargers Truther appeal post right here. And anyone else who wants a pure runner type, if you pass on Michigan's Blake Corum and want a physical bruiser type at running back later on. You can look at Wisconsin's Braylon Allen, Notre Dame's Audric Estime again, South Dakota State's Isaiah Davis, or Georgia's Kendall Milton, who I liked as a contact guy. The numbers, I think, are better than I thought on film, but still the numbers are there. He didn't get a ton of carries. So anyway, there's not a lot of pure just like I'm big bruiser kind of types in this class. And I think that some of these guys are more than that. But Braylon Allen, Estime, Isaiah Davis, Kendall Milton, I think, kind of fit that mold.
Yeah, and I don't think Blake Corum is that either. But for whatever,
I agree, but he's viewed as that guy.
For whatever reason, everybody's like, oh, man, like he breaks so many tackles. The data does not agree, and neither does the film. I do not understand. But, yeah, I've lowered on Braylon Allen a bit. I cannot quit Audric Estime. I really, really like him. I just think that the fit with Gus Edwards is a tiny bit weird. Isaiah Davis would be my choice here of this group in terms of like by where far. The Chargers could get him. Him being 207th, I again do not agree with that assessment. He's a top 100 player for me right now, easily.
Yeah, I think that's where he falls for me too easily. I think Arjun just posted something, or I forget who it was, but it's like rushing yards over expected, and then rushing yards on like rushing yards on perfectly blocked plays and non-perfectly blocked plays. And he was like 7 yards a carry on non-perfectly blocked plays. It's like, okay, why is this guy 207th on the board? I get it. Not Georgia, not Tennessee or Alabama or whatever, but still. The numbers are the numbers, and they're awesome. It's one of the best running back profiles, at least as a runner, that I can remember coming out of FCS in a while. All of these guys just kind of are the same. Davis really stands out to me.
Yeah, no, 100%. Kendall Milton, Fresno guy. The unfortunate thing with Kendall Milton is he's had like three major injuries, like knee injuries.
Ooh.
So that's why, because he, I watched him play in person in high school when he was here, and he was like probably the best football player Fresno's had in quite some time in terms of high school talent. Mm. But man, like the knee injuries just did him dirty. I think a lot of people wanted him to stay another year, be healthy, because I think that the physical talent is better than 244, but he just
yeah, couldn't
be on the field.
Okay. Yeah, I was curious why he, A, didn't get so many touches, and B, was so low. Okay, that makes sense. Same with Dylan Johnson, those kind of guys. Real quick, Gabriel's asking about like a lot of love for the Memphis running back, Blake Watson. What kind of back is he? If we did a receiving back category, he'd be in there.
Yeah.
With the Arizona running back, with Will Shipley, Michael Wiley, that's the Arizona back's name, Dylan Lobb, those guys. So if we did one, that's kind of where he would be. I just didn't think of like an early receiving back that the Chargers would want. So they'd have to find someone else later. Like they all kind of just fit into like round three or later types.
Yeah. Yeah. Memphis has a very specific type at running back, and that is what Blake Watson is. So this is your Calvin Austin, although he's more of a receiver. This is your Antonio Gibson. This is your Tony Pollard. Like that's the kind of stylistic running back that you're getting. Yeah. Would be thrilled with the pick if the Chargers could get him, because the Ravens always had that like third change of pace guy who could be a receiver, hit the edges. Like Blake Watson would be a great fit for what the Chargers have. They just would be missing the second one. They don't have the second one right now. They do not have your Justice Hill type or your formerly Gus Edwards role behind J.K. Dobbins type.
Yeah, I agree. I think they'll go to, I think two running backs is in the cards. Or in some capacity, whether it's draft and then sign one later.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got to finish this room out.
Yeah. All right. There you go. 1 hour and 14 minutes of the other guys. So, again, this is the deep cuts on the Guilty as Charged podcast. Hopefully you guys liked it. Apologies for, like, the YouTube glitch that was happening there for a minute. But now we're back up to a normal viewing amount for us. So appreciate you guys for sticking around. Tyler, any final thoughts before we head out?
Almost there, man. Almost there.
Yes. Our episode on Thursday will be 1 week away from the draft. As a reminder, we're going to be live all weekend long for the draft. Tyler and I, joined by some of the other Guilty as Charged podcast gentlemen as well, Alex Insdorf, Arjun Menon, and Alex Katzen. I think Alex Katzen is going to be in Detroit, so we'll confirm that. But should be a lot of fun. This is the most excited draft I've been a part of, just because we have like no idea what can happen. And obviously the Chargers pick at number 5 overall in each round. So gonna be a lot of fun. Hopefully you guys enjoy every minute as we do. We'll be live again on Thursday. Appreciate all of you guys for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. As always, bolt up.